Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today, we have a terrific return guest, James Montemagno. He is a development evangelist at Xamarin and a Microsoft MVP. He's been a .NET developer for over a decade, working in a wide range of industries. And before joining Xamarin, he was a professional mobile developer using the Xamarin platform for over 4 years. James, how are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you so much for having me back on, Jesse. It's a pleasure and an honor once again to be on yet. I really love it.
Well, we appreciate your taking the time, especially right now when so much is going on with Xamarin. Xamarin 4.0 was just officially released not all that long ago, a couple weeks. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it was just, about 2 weeks ago was the official launch of Xamarin 4. It's very exciting because it's kind of a culmination of, a lot of work over the last year since Xamarin 3, a little bit more than a year actually, the entire product line. I think when you look at, build, monitoring, testing, and then accelerating mobile application development in that last year and a half, not only has Xamarin changed a lot of our products for all developers, but the entire landscape of mobile has shifted as well with wearables and just TV and just everything coming together. It's really amazing to be a developer at this point in time. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing and a little overwhelming. Go ahead.
I remember the world coming back. I've been doing mobile development for over 4 years now. October marked my 4 year anniversary of the first day that I found Xamarin to do cross-platform mobile development. And I remember those good old days. It had, I had one iPhone. It was 3.5 inches and one resolution. You had, hard coding values in there. And there was what Android 2.0 had just come out, something like that. And Windows Phone was just this tiny little market. And that was it. That was all we had to worry about, iPads weren't a thing really yet. It wasn't a tablet game. It was crazy. But now, it's just this entire spectrum of everything coming together. There's a lot to take in. So that's why I think having the tools and the knowledge to be able to bring this all together and become a specialist, but be able to take your code everywhere is so important now more than ever.
Absolutely. Let me lay out a number of topics and then we can take them one at a time. But there's so much going on that I want to make sure we get to all of them. First of all, I'd love to talk with you about Xamarin Forms 2.0. I think that's a huge part of Xamarin 4. I'd like to talk to you about the changes with Visual Studio as a development environment for Xamarin, talk about Test Cloud, Insights, and time allowing. I'd also like to talk about some of the open source community efforts, especially plugins. Does that sound like a plan?
Oh, I love it. That sounds great.
Excellent. Let's start with Xamarin Forms 2.0, near and dear to my heart. I know that they are, under the hood, faster, but on the website, it also says more functional. Can you talk a little bit about in what way?
Sure. So, Xamarin Forms has had a huge, huge developer adoption over the last about year and a half since, a little bit over a year since Xamarin Forms was released. And if people don't know what Xamarin Forms is, essentially, in the traditional way of mobile development, with Xamarin at least, you build out a shared code base. So all your business logic models, view models, RESTful service calls, things like that. And what we love about Xamarin is that you get to a full native application. So with Xamarin, traditionally, you're building a native user interface for iOS, Android, and Windows. Whether it be storyboards, Android XML, and then XAML for Windows worlds, whether it's desktop or phone. Now, Xamarin Forms, though, it says, wouldn't it be great if you could just abstract the commonalities between these platforms into a single cross-platform API and do that all from C# or XAML? So you have pages, layouts, and different controls that you can bring in. Now, when Xamarin Forms 1.0 was launched, I remember being on that webinar making my very first Scott Hanselman application and seeing it progress over time. Developers have really been pushing Xamarin Forms to its limits from the original. It was made for forms, like Xamarin Forms, right? Forms over data type applications, things that are kind of similar screens. And we always knew, and you always knew, I'm sure, Jesse, that Xamarin Forms could really do a lot more, even though what we originally intended it to do. As a 1.0 release, you want to kind of over-deliver and under-commit and over-deliver, right? So, it's for forms and stuff like that, but you can do a lot more. So I've been releasing applications with Xamarin Forms for a while. And with Forms 2.0, it's really a culmination of all the work and all the feedback that developers have been giving us. So they wanted it easier to make custom renders. They wanted more gestures. They wanted more solid support for all the different Windows platforms out there. They wanted enhanced list view support. They wanted enhanced IntelliSense and pre-compiled XAML and just better, faster, and stronger, essentially. And they wanted easier ways to build beautiful applications. And that's really what Xamarin Forms 2.0 is all about, is that culmination of all the work and all the little enhancements that you may not even know have been in there for just a little bit of time and going all the way to 2.0. So What that means from a developer point of view is that you go and you upgrade, you get some new NuGet packages. That's how Xamarin Forms is delivered. And essentially, you should just automatically start seeing a lot of enhancements just off of that, because Xamarin Forms, we've been doing a lot of image optimizations, list view scrolling optimizations, layout optimizations across the way. And this is all based on feedback from developers that they're giving us. So really being vocal and outspoken and just giving your feedback to us has really been helping craft Xamarin Forms into a beautiful, beautiful cross-platform library. But there's a lot of enhancements. You know, we talk about faster and we talk about list views. A lot of applications are that. They're lists of data being displayed. You're pulling it down from the internet or from Azure, from Couchbase or somewhere, and you're putting in a list, master detail flow back and forth. So we it's very important. We introduce this brand new flag, essentially, for Xamarin Forms that allows you to tell Xamarin Forms how you would like how you essentially would like to optimize the list view caching. And what that means is that you can when you think of lists of data, there's two types of caching for a list view cell, right? We have either retain element or recycle element. And when you think about how you're laying down your data, you either have cells that are very static, that are very much the same. They're not growing in height, or, you know, they'll have the same content. So the cell are essentially the same, but the content inside of it is changing. Like the text is changing, the images are changing, but they're not morphing cells. So essentially, when you say recycle element, Xamarin Forms will know to automatically recycle this element even better and say, hey, listen, the developer told me that we're probably not going to be morphing all of the different changes, so I can enhance and recycle the elements better to really get optimizations. And then retain element essentially tells Xamarin Forms that, hey, listen, this is really dynamic data that's going to be changing all the time as far as layout is concerned, and Xamarin Forms optimize for that scenario. So now on a screen-by-screen, list view by list view basis, you can tell Xamarin Forms exactly what your data templates are like, and it'll handle the native rendering and optimization, which is really cool.
Now, before we go any further, is this all documented on Xamarin.com, and does that documentation call out these specific changes?
It does, absolutely. You can always find release notes when you just go to the developer portal, and there's a release notes section, and also on the forum, Jason Smith, who's the team lead of Xamarin Forms, is always posting this. But throughout the documentation, when you go to developer.com, developer.xamarin.com, you'll see Xamarin Forms. When you tap on that, you're going to see all updated documentation with all the new improvements in Xamarin Forms 2.0, and you'll see specifically it's called List View Caching Strategy. And it's just a simple, it's not even a flag that you can either pass it if you're creating in C# into the constructor, or you just set it as a property on your list view, and that's it.
Very cool. I just did a Plosite course on customizing controls with custom rendering. It sounded like you said that that's getting easier.
Well, essentially, over time, Xamarin Forms, in the beginning, we were a little bit more restrictive about what you could custom render and what you could get down to and what properties you could create for the custom renderers. And over time, if you look from start to where we are now, a lot more properties have opened up. There's been less work that you've had to go and put into them. And they've changed a lot about how exactly the element binding's happening, the property events are propagating up, and just essentially easier to get access to. You know, rendering, of course, isn't the easiest thing in the world, because you have to know iOS or Android or Windows to get down into that. But if you've been creating a lot of custom renderers, you'll just see a lot of small little tweaks to like grab the native control, for instance, things like that, and a lot less works that you may have had to do in the past. So not a huge shift around that, but small little tweaks, I would say, to the custom rendering.
Okay, let's talk about the compiled XAML. How does that work from a developer viewpoint?
Yeah, so essentially, why would you need pre-compiled screens and pre-compiled XAML? Well, you know, a lot of Xamarin Forms developers in the very, very beginning just use C#. The XAML support was still new, fully supported. I'm a XAML believer, so I'm XAML all the way. But a lot of our samples early on were just C#. And the nice thing about building everything in C# is that you immediately get the IntelliSense. Immediately get compile time, or even just IntelliSense checks telling you, is that a correct property? Is that valid? Does that thing exist? It makes it very foolproof. When you go over to the XAML world, essentially the Xamarin Forms XAML was always runtime parsed, essentially. So you would write the XAML, and then at startup, when your page is loading or you're doing different things, the XAML would be parsed at that instance. And this leads to one of two scenarios. Either it just works and it's great, and it's very actually a little overhead to parse that because these mobile phones are so crazy fast. But the downside of that is that it doesn't work and it throws an exception and your application crashes because maybe you mistyped a binding or you mistyped a property name. And since it's not pre-compiled as part of the hook, there's no like MS build step to do that. Essentially, the developer has to go figure out what went wrong and read this big call stack. So a lot of these features in Forms 2.0 are opt-in. So list view caching, that's an opt-in type of thing. There's already enhancements around it, but that's opt-in. Now to do the pre-compiled screens, essentially it's a flag that you toggle in your portable class library or wherever your XAML pages exist. And what you do is you put a little assembly, kind of like in your assembly info.cs, where you would put like version information. You could just put it right in there. You can do it on an assembly level or a per screen or per control basis. So it's really granular, which is really nice because maybe, the pre-compiled XAML is still kind of preview, I would say, just to be sure that I haven't seen too many issues with it at all. But you can kind of get granular and say only this page should be pre-compiled because it's really heavy, but the rest of the application is okay and don't want to risk it or something. But essentially you just say pre-compiled XAML. It's like this little flag that you set in the assembly. And when you compile your portable class library where your XAML exists, you'll get real errors in your error log, in your error list, to say, listen, this property doesn't exist. This, isn't the correct value. This thing doesn't exist. So essentially, before you even go to run your application, you'll know if your XAML is correct or not, kind of like you would expect, which is very nice.
No, that's huge because, as we all know, compile time errors are 100% reproducible, and runtime errors can hide for a long time. So that's a very big change, and that'll be very welcome. Let me switch you over to material design. You talked for a few minutes about what it is and then what support there is in Forms 2.0.
Sure, absolutely. So this is probably one of my favorite topics because it's a very complex topic. And a little bit. I'm a big Android fanboy. Mm-hmm. And I always like to call Android just this most beautiful disaster. And it really is. It is just all over the place. And how Android works essentially is that every single application has its own set of like attributes and properties that it can set, but there's also Android level properties and themes that go around it. Now, in the very early days of Android, like Gingerbread days and Froyo days, 2.0 days, there was just like this default Android theme that existed. And then with Android Honeycomb and Ice Cream Sandwich, there was a theme, but no one really called it by name because Google didn't push it that much, but it's called the Holo, H-O-L-O, kind of like HoloLens, essentially. And Holo had like this rebranding of Android. It made it very slick. They moved to a light theme. It looked very, very nice, but there was a big shift. And this will go into the material design thing as this progresses, kind of see the evolution of Android. But essentially, something in Holo design was introduced, which is the action bar. The action bar essentially is your title bar, your navigation bar, if you will, from iOS inside of Android. And that only existed in Android 3.0 and above. So here's what Google did is they created this thing called App Compat. It's a very, very important concept in an Android because Android isn't like iOS. iOS, everyone updates to iOS 9, near instantaneous. I was using Xamarin Insights for one of my apps for iOS only. I released an update with that Insights in, and I was tracking over time iOS. And as soon as iOS 9 became stable, within a week, 100% of my users were on iOS 9. It was crazy. Yeah, but on Android, it's very slow to progress because there's so many different versions on all the different devices update automatically. So, Marshmallow, that's been out for a few months now, is at like 0.3% of the market, so very slow. So Google needed to address this to essentially say, listen, we can add all these great features in the new versions of Android, but no one's going to get them. We can add them, we can make the most beautiful applications, but no one's going to be able to update these on the older versions. So essentially, they gave these libraries called the support libraries to developers. There's a whole bunch of them, but the most important when it comes to the look and feel of your application is the app compat one. And essentially, I would say all, if not, not all, but a high, high majority of Android applications are all built on app compat, whether they're built in Java or they're built with Xamarin. We've had app compat for a long, long time. What app compat originally meant to do was to bring the action bar all the way back to version 7 of Android. So pretty much Froyo and forward. Now, this gave a nice consistent look and feel to your Android applications, even if your user of your application couldn't update to the latest version of Android. So here's what happened. Essentially, App Compat was good, and then Lollipop came out a year ago. And with Lollipop, this essentially introduced material design and material theming. And I won't get too deep into the whole style versus theming, but essentially in Android, you theme your application. And that theme is either built into Android or built into one of these App Compat libraries. So with Android 5.0 Lollipop, material theming came out, and this just gave your application a beautiful look and feel, gave your style, your status bar, this beautiful accent colors, you know, accented all of your controls and things like that. But again, the problem was that it only existed in 5.0. So what Google did is they updated the App Compat library, part of the support libraries, to say, we're going to bring in App Compat theming and introduce that and upgrade that to Lollipop and Material Design theme. So over that year, and then when Marshmallow released, essentially Material Design is here to stay. Most applications are taking advantage of it. It's a wonderful, wonderful world. And with App Compat, you can make Material Design through all of your applications as far back as you can possibly go for essentially 99.9% of all Android devices out there. So you get one beautiful look and feel. Now, when Xamarin Forms was getting started over a year and a half ago, essentially when it first released Xamarin Forms 1.0, it really wasn't a big deal because Holo theming had taken over the world and Action Bar was just part of it. So Xamarin Forms, you can go back to API level 15, which is currently 96% of the entire Android market, which is very impressive. And it didn't support App Compat at the time because it didn't need to. Because you couldn't really plan out all of everything that Google's doing when it comes to material design and things like that. That was way in the future. So what happened in Xamarin Forms 2.0 with adding material design and material theming? I have a great blog post on it. Essentially, we worked with the team, and I'm an Android guy, so I worked with Jason. And I said, listen, we need to make this happen. This is going to happen. They've put it on the roadmap. And if out of the box, you'll just have the standard Xamarin Forms style. But with literally four lines of code and two Android XML files, you can completely theme your entire application with material theming and material design in your Xamarin Forms application. It's that simple. And with that comes a lot of awesome things. One, you get the entire, obviously, material theming through your application. You get an updated flyout navigation. We call it a navigation drawer in Android. So it's very beautiful. It comes over the top. You also get brand new tab support. So material tabs come in and they're part of the view pager. So you can flip through them. So it's kind of like as you would expect, flipping back and forth. And now this is going to give your Android application a beautiful, consistent material design theme through all the way back to the as far back as Xamarin Forms can go, which is 15. So your application is going to look beautiful. You can have your own styling, your accent colors, and all the different controls react to this. And it's literally, I've updated all my applications. You can do it in probably like 10 minutes. It's just that simple. It's really, really beautiful. So when you update to Xamarin Forms 2.0, check out my blog on how to do it. It's literally just copy and paste a few things, run your application, and boom, it's beautiful.
That is extraordinary. I'm going to change topics on you and ask you about the improved support for Visual Studio, and especially with the improvements, whether you recommend using Visual Studio as your IDE, or if you're a Mac person, do you still think that Xamarin Studio is the way to go?
Sure, that's a great question. So, you know, with Xamarin 4, it's really about building, testing, and monitoring, and of course, accelerating your growth. That's kind of the theme of Xamarin 4. And what we did essentially, I've been a Visual Studio developer for over a decade. So I love Visual Studio. I'm a Windows guy. I own a Mac, you know, just because for Apple development, right? You got to have one. I'm pretty jealous of anyone that has a Surface Book because they're quite beautiful. I'm always a Visual Studio guy at heart. I do love Xamarin Studio. And I've been using Visual Studio with Xamarin for the last 4 years. I started with Android development when that was available in Visual Studio. And I did all my iOS development in Xamarin Studio until we added support in Visual Studio. Now, there was some complexities around Visual Studio when it comes to iOS. Android, totally fine. Totally, it's great. It's just Google ships all their SDKs, everything they need over there. Now, with iOS, there's a lot of restrictions about where the build can happen, where the tools exist, and different EULAs and different things you have to kind of opt into with being an Apple developer. And you think about it, iOS tools and SDKs, Xcode, it's only shipped on a Mac. So you essentially have to have a Mac somewhere to install that stuff to do the proper build. Now, of course, if you don't have one, you can still write code and you can compile locally, and it's just going to compile to make sure things are running, but you couldn't package up a bundle and deploy it on a simulator or a device. Now, we've always had support to essentially connect over to your Mac and do these remote builds. So think of it as a remote build host, essentially, and debugging host. And we've had that for a long, long time. And essentially, you would pair your Visual Studio instance with your Mac. And in Xamarin 4, we've essentially written that from the ground up and to make it transparent. So if you're getting started, you don't even really know that it's there. And that's the point. Essentially, when you want to build your iOS application or do design on it, it'll say, hey, I need to connect over and you know, make the secure connection over to some Mac on your network. And that's it. It's all over an SSH tunnel, and you connect and do a remote build and a remote debug and everything like you would expect. And it's super butter smooth. And it only connects when it needs to. And there's a huge enhancement that you can now essentially connect as many instances of your Visual Studio to a single Mac and do builds and do everything that you want to do. In the world of a Visual Studio developer, that's me, is I always have multiple IDEs open. I'm working on multiple projects. So now I can be working on three or four different projects, a different library over here, bring in code back and forth and do builds and everything I want to my personal Mac, and I'm good to go, which is very, very nice. And there's tons of other optimizations. I mean, we've added in tons of brand new support for the iOS designer, some new NIP support, just enhancements. The Android designer got some material theming and designing built into it, really enhancements on that front. So there's been a lot that's in there. We talk about kind of building from the ground up for Visual Studio. It's really, really lovely. And then, of course, what would I recommend? I mean, I've always recommended, Jesse, is pick whatever IDE you like the best. You know, not everyone has Visual Studio. So obviously Xamarin Studio is a great, you know, option for anyone that just has a Mac and just wants to do iOS and Android development. I do a lot of library development. So I spend a lot of time in Visual Studio releasing plugins and working on Windows applications. And of course, we work with the Community Edition of Visual Studio too. So kind of you pick what's best for you. And I would say I'm about 50-50 between the two IDEs as far as my usage. So I spend half my day in Visual Studio and half my day in Xamarin Studio. And the nice thing there is that it's very important that a lot of developers don't know that the same solutions and the same projects just open and just work in both IDEs. So if you start work in Visual Studio, you can open that same solution and the same projects over in Xamarin Studio and go both ways on that. And they synchronize with source control and everything like that. So I think, you know, to me, it depends what kind of your cycle is. If you're really integrated into TFS and if you're really integrated into Azure, you know, Visual Studio is your go-to. And I just installed update Visual Studio 2015 update one. Very excited about that. They fixed NuGet package manager. They completely broke it. They completely fixed it. I'm very happy about that. And that gets me excited, you know, and they added like a whole bunch of support for like R support and a bunch of other things. And I really like what they're doing over there in Visual Studio 2015. And of course, C# 6. I mean, I just simply love it. You know, we have our Xamarin Studio 6.0 Roslyn version coming out soon. It's already in preview with full C# 6 finalized support. And there's just something about Visual Studio C# 6 support that I just simply love, because I just love C# 6. It's just amazing. So, you know, the nice thing there is now if you're using 2015 and C# 6, you can still do the same thing in the current version of Xamarin Studio. We've had C# 6 support for a long time. So yeah, pick what's right for you. I love them both. And of course, you know, if you're an indie developer and price is a concern, like I do love Xamarin Studio. $25 a month gets you off the ground running, building iOS and Android apps. So
let me take a digression and tell me the two features in C# 6 you like the most.
Oh man, C# 6. Let me tell you. So, I mean, I think everyone is going to love string interpolation. It's a feature that you can wrap your head around easily. It's like, listen, we did a string format before. Now I don't have to string format, pass it 18 different arguments and put squiggly braces, zeros, braces two, braces three, braces four. Essentially, you bring it in line into the string. So you bring that squiggly, instead of saying squiggly zero, you say person dot first name, and it figures it all out. You can format it. You can do a whole bunch of stuff inside of it. You know, string interpolation just makes sense. And then, you know, my biggest one that I have to love, and it just makes so much sense because I've solved so many bugs with it already, is just null condition checking.
Yep.
With the Elvis operator, essentially you do a question mark dot on something, And if it's null, then it doesn't continue. If it's not null, it continues on. You can do that on indexing on things, on lists, on arrays, on anything you want. And it's, and then you use it with a null coalescing, with double question mark, to really make that a beautiful thing. And man, just getting rid of null checks and just bringing it down together, just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And those are my top two. There's a lot of other little small quirks that I love. Essentially just using await inside of try catch, you know, catch and, finally blocks. I mean, come on. Like, I mean, that was a no-brainer that it finally was added. But I mean, it's so nice not to be like, oh, I need to, like, an error occurred. Let me do this thing. Let me do this thing outside of it. Let me just put it inside of it and it just makes sense. So that's really nice. But really the null condition checking, oh, that one, I could just, if that was like, if that was the only feature, I would have been happy with it. You know what I mean? Like, that's, it's a thing of beauty. So.
Okay, let's move on to what I think of as part two, which is Xamarin Test Cloud and Xamarin Insights. And we'll start with Test Cloud. And maybe you can help me differentiate between Test Cloud, Test Recorder, and Xamarin UI Test. That might be a good starting point.
Sure. So, you know, at some point you gotta test your application, you know, and,
what a concept,
you know, who would have thunk that I would have had to test my application. And a lot of developers, especially me, we think about business logic unit testing, with NUnit or XUnit per se. So we have a method, it does something, we expect it to do something, we can assert on that, and we get code coverage that way. Automated user interface testing hasn't been around for too long, and essentially it says that our business logic may be performing correctly, but there's another side to that story, which is our user interface reacting as well? And when it comes to the world of mobile, it's maybe a newer concept, but you know, I've been a .NET developer for a long time, and we've been doing automated testing like this for quite some time, but it's harder on a small mobile device, and the fragmentation out there makes it really hard. There's all these flavors of iOS. There's iPad, iPad Pros, which I just felt for the first time. It's like the biggest thing I've ever seen. It's crazy. It's like a Surface thing. I don't know. It's bananas. And then you have Android, which is just, you know, 24,000 different unique devices out there. How do you test these different flavors of these devices and screen sizes? So essentially,
I'll just tell you that my answer is to go buy one of each, but go ahead.
You know, I tried that. You know, I tried to buy all the different devices and shove them in my tiny 500 square foot apartment in Seattle, and they just didn't fit, Jesse. It got really expensive. I just really had nowhere to sleep. And I mean, but it's a nice, you know, nice looking device wall. So, you know, if we start actually in reverse of where we went, so the very thing that you would start with is Xamarin UI Test. And Xamarin UI Test is a framework. You download it, it's a NuGet package into your project. And Xamarin UI Test, Xamarin Test Recorder, Xamarin Test Cloud work with any application written in any language with any framework. So if it's a PhoneGap application, a native Objective-C, Swift, Java, Xamarin application, they all work with UI Test, with Test Recorder, and the Test Cloud. So Xamarin Test Cloud and everything below it, any application ever. So Xamarin UI Test, it allows you essentially to write automated user interface scripts in C# inside of Visual Studio or Xamarin Studio. And what that means is that you're writing NUnit type tests, but Xamarin UI Test allows you to do what your users would be doing on your application. So logging in, entering text, pressing a button, navigating to a new screen, pinching to zoom, swiping, doing all this different stuff. And then you can assert and you can query for the control based on the ID, which is really unique. And then you can get different properties. Is it enabled? What's the color? Where's it at? Is it visible? Things like that. You can automate the geolocation. You can rotate the device. You can see how your application is performing. You can scroll down. You can do essentially anything. So Xamarin UI Test in the beginning, how it was written was essentially a REPL, a read eval print loop. So you would say, I want to start this test and I want to enter the REPL, and I could type a few commands and I could essentially pass commands to and from my live application running in, let's say, a simulator, the Xamarin Android player. So you could say, tap this button, and it would tap that button. And then you could say, copy this test and put it in. And then what you would essentially do is you would assert, instead of on your business logic, you would assert on what your user interface is doing. So, you know, is the button enabled when I enter a username and password? What happens when the password is right? What happens when the password is wrong? What happens if they didn't enter a password? Should that button be enabled? So it allows you to essentially test regressions as you're adding new features. Maybe other developers come online. So Xamarin UI Test is kind of the key fundamental part of this, the scripting language. And Xamarin UI Test is now, with its 1.0 release, I think it's actually 1.2, 1.0 release, it's completely free to use for everyone on a local emulator, simulator, or on a local device. So you can build up your entire regression suite. You can run them all locally on your simulator or your emulator or your local device for free. Unlimited, you know, amount of times, runs, anything you want to do, which is very nice. And you're good to go. Now, the test recorder is another free tool. It's in preview. So this is what we announced with Xamarin 4, which is said, you know, a lot of developers love the fine granularity of seeing their visual tree, typing very explicit commands. But to get up and running and build kind of your first user interface test, your automated scripts, is a little bit tedious. What I would really like to do is essentially have my app run, click around in it, navigate to where I want to go, enter some text, and I want the script to be automatically generated for me. And that's what the test recorder does. You point it at a simulator or at a device, you interact with it, and as you're interacting with your application, the Xamarin UI test is written for you, which is really cool. And then you can pause it, you can modify the test, and you can do screenshots along the way, and then you can play it back until you have it exactly how you want.
And then you can copy and paste it right in place.
Even better, you just click a button that says copy, and then it copies it for you. You don't even have to like do very much. You just say export, it exports the test, and you can export in one of two ways. You can bring it back into your UI test project in Xamarin Studio or Visual Studio, or you have a upload to the test cloud to actually test that. So that's really nice because it just simplifies the entire process of getting off the ground running. And then you can, you know, smooth over your tests and do your certs and things like you would expect. And that really is what brings it to the test cloud. So kind of pulling it all together. You have your UI tests, you've maybe generated them via the REPL or via the test recorder, and you're like, I'm ready to go. So if you're in the test recorder and you just want to do a smoke test and say, I have this test, this looks good, send to test cloud, or you bring it back into your solution and project, and maybe you tie it into your CI cycle with VSO or maybe Jenkins or Team City, or from Xamarin Studio, you can say, hey, upload this to the test cloud. And the Xamarin test cloud is what is paid essentially, because you have a paid subscription to the test cloud. And the test cloud is the world's largest device lab. It's over 2,000 unique iOS and Android devices. And let me actually get the count. If you go to test cloud, I'm gonna type this in. So let's see, testcloud.xamarin.com/devices. Currently we have 2,090 devices. A week ago I checked and we had 2,000. We added 90 devices in like the last week and a half. And this is over nearly 1,200 Android devices and nearly 1,000 iOS phones and tablets sitting in our physical devices, real devices, going all the way back to Froyo, Android 2.0 and iOS 6. That allows you to test any of your applications for these tests. You can run them locally for free, or you need to see them on a wider range of all these iPads and iPhones and Kindle tablets and Fire, whatever you want, essentially. And you can upload them immediately to the test cloud and do a full regression. So what I like to do is a very simple test on every application. There's a command called app.screenshot that takes a screenshot. I just do that. And I say, run this on the top 25 devices. Does my app even work? Like, that's a good test. Like, that's a simple smoke test. Does it even launch? You know, and that's it. And then what I do is I start building out my test suite and say, okay, here I go. And I start testing out a few smoke tests. And maybe I do my top, you know, my normal workflow, my top 10 tests to do that. And I start building this out over time. Now, what's really unique is that Xamarin subscribers get an hour of device, of test cloud device minutes every single month. So you have a full hour to do some very small smoke tests of your application, do some screenshot type stuff like that, and actually get it running, which is very nice. So you already have it included in your Xamarin subscription on any of the tiers, and you can do that. And if you need more, you start seeing that you're like, you know, you need test cloud and you need it on all these devices, you need these huge test runs, then there are certain subscriptions that you can subscribe to for the test cloud.
Let's talk about the final piece that came with Xamarin 4, which is Xamarin Insights.
Yeah, so Xamarin Insights is our crash reporting and analytics library and platform, essentially, for developers. We support all different flavors of Xamarin iOS, Xamarin Android, Xamarin Mac, and all the Windows platforms. And essentially what we said, you know, we announced Xamarin Insights preview at the last Xamarin Evolve, which is our developer conference. We have another one upcoming next April in Orlando, which I hope everyone will come to, evolve.xamarin.com, plug, plug. But we announced, I was on stage with Nat, announcing Xamarin Insights. The most amazing part about Xamarin Insights is that it's a general availability. It's out there 100%. It's out of preview now. With Xamarin Insights, what I love about it is that first, most importantly, for any single Xamarin subscriber, crash reporting is completely free. And that means from a single line of code, just one line of code in any of your applications, you get fully managed and native crash reports for any of your iOS, Android, or Windows applications.
That we could just stop there. That is extraordinary. And that is free across however many users your application is being used by.
Yeah, for crash reporting. So any crashes that come in, for crash reporting, and when you talk about crash reporting, you get the single, all the issues that come up, whether they're warnings, because you can report your own warnings, or you get the unhandled crashes of your application. And in a report, the more information and stuff that you're tracking with Xamarin Insights help you see what's going on in your application for those free crash reports. So those crash reports could tell you the user's device information, are their battery low, was the Wi-Fi on? What were the steps that you tracked? Maybe they navigated to this screen, navigated to that screen. So the Issues tab in Xamarin Insights, which is all of your crash reporting, is completely free, as much crash reporting as you want, and you get 30-day retention of data, which means that you get to see all of the crashes that occurred on a rolling 30-day basis, so the last 30 days. So essentially, you can think of it as, you know, today's December 1st, I can see all of November's history. And then tomorrow, you know, I have the last 30 days back, and that keeps rolling. To me, it's because I'm fixing bugs all the time. So completely free, 30-day data retention of all crashes for any Xamarin subscriber for any of their applications, which is amazing. Now, that's just like the starting point of Xamarin Insights. Xamarin Insights, of course, you could be tracking all of these events. You could track timing on it. You're going to be tracking pages. Page views, different event data, seeing how long different events calls are taking from the server. If you're in perhaps a enterprise, I really love our identify method, which essentially says, I'm rolling out this application to all of my employees in my company, and I want some indicator of who it is. Maybe it's their employee ID, maybe it's their email address or something like that. You know, and this is data that, you know, your users would be opting into, and you would notify them about that you're collecting this type of data and reporting it somewhere. Just, you know, being a good developer, you tell your users what you're collecting, essentially. But essentially, what could happen here is that you get a crash report back, and you can search through any of your users that are using it. And Bob comes to you, and Bob's like, hey, my app crashed. And Bob doesn't know what version of iOS he has on his iPhone or what specific model it is or what he did in the application. But you could go pull up Bob's email address, type it in. Here's his entire crash report. Here's all the times that he's been using it. And you could essentially diagnose what Bob's problem was on that very specific device. And then you could take that data that you're collecting and go into like the different eventing part of it. So you could see how many times have my user gone to this page, they go to that page, how long is it taking to query Azure, to query my HTTP, you know, services and RESTful calls, or to get my database or something like that. And you could diagnose over time and monitor your application's health. Now, that part of it, so anything outside of the free, so outside of the crash reporting, when it comes to the in-depth analysis of your users or of your events or integrations into the different services like VSO or GitHub and things like that, those are different subscription models too for Insights. But as far as the crash reporting, that part is free for Xamarin subscribers. But all the other stuff you would see on your crash report, but actually diagnosing and going into those would be a more complex scenario.
Now, you may have already covered this, but let me just nail this down. At what point in the development cycle would you insert Xamarin Insights?
So that's a great question. And we've essentially kind of helped you with that. If you make a new project inside of Xamarin Studio and soon in Visual Studio too, there's a button that says add Xamarin Insights when you create the project from scratch, because that's when you want to add it. To be honest with you, you want to add it from the very beginning. And when you check that button, it'll automatically create your applications on insights.xamarin.com. It'll register the API key for you and insert all the calls, install the NuGet package, and get you on your way going. Because to be honest, I find it very important. I'm testing the application on simulators, on devices. I'm on the go. Maybe I push it to beta users that I'm giving it to, and I should be able to collect all that data from the very beginning. And of course, in Xamarin Insights, you can filter based on version numbers. You can say, oh, you know, only show me stuff on the public releasing version of this going forward, essentially, and help that. So to me, I've been putting Insights into all my applications from day one, and I've been updating all my applications that don't have it. You know, I released an application 4 years ago, my very first application, and I was working with my previous company to update it and get it running, because they're having some just, you know, needed maintenance and updated to iOS 9. And I put Insights in there, and within 2 weeks, I closed nearly 100 different crashes in my application. all these crazy edge cases that I never thought about, because I have tens of thousands of users using this. Yeah. And of course, you know, some of those are combined together, but I closed and solved and pushed tons of just bug fixes, a lot of null reference exceptions, things when your app goes in the background and, you know, stuff like that. I had a user that I looked at a day had like 4,000 sessions in the application. Like they were just had it open all the time. It was crazy. So I always say, like, update your application, put in insights, and then, you know, at the very beginning, start it. And that's it. Yeah, totally.
Great, great. Yeah. Okay, so now part three, because I'm not letting you go.
Okay.
Open source and the open source community, and specifically plugins. What can you tell us about all of that?
So obviously, you know, Xamarin, we love the open source community. You think about Mono, where Mono came from. It's an open source project. We heavily contribute back into Mono. Xamarin Studio, which came from Mono Develop, is an open source IDE. You can go find those bits. You can contribute. You can do stuff with them. You can create plugins for Xamarin Studio, add-ins for Xamarin Studio to add really cool functionality. We have an open source contributor subscription. So if you're working on an open source project and you're maintaining it and you want to make it compatible with Xamarin, or you're working on a Xamarin Studio add-in or something like that, you can get a complimentary Xamarin subscription to work and maintain those open source projects. Maybe you need to tie it into your CI cycle, stuff like that. You know, we have that entire open source subscription. We have a form that you just fill out and boom, you're good to go. Now, this concept we talked about a little bit previously on the podcast, which is plugins for Xamarin and Windows. And usually I just say plugins for Xamarin because we're talking to Xamarin developers mostly, but they work across a wide variety of Windows platforms. And essentially it says it takes the model of what Xamarin Forms did for the user interface, but for the native APIs. When you think of iOS, Android, and Windows, the amazing part about Xamarin is that you're not only crafting a great native application, but you're getting access to every single little bit of those native APIs. So if you need geolocation, push notifications, you need text-to-speech, you need settings, you know, these things that are built into every single platform, you can get access to them all in C# with C# features. So the problem, of course, well, if I take it back, you know, I've been doing this for 4 years and I love that part of it. But what I found myself doing over and over again is writing the same code over and over. Oh, I need this pop-up box, or I need settings, I need this. So I would go and see what I did in the last project, copy this in there. And if I needed to access it from shared code, well, I can't write Android or iOS code in a portable class library. I'd write an interface and I'd abstract it and then I'd do the implementation. So I found myself doing this all over. And one of my best friends, Luke Carries, who's a web developer, but he told me one day, he goes, you know, I just create these packages for everything because I came up with a motto of I was writing the same code over and over again. If I ever have to write the same code twice, put it in a package. And that resonated with me to the fact that why aren't we doing this as Xamarin developers? Why don't we take all these great APIs that are in iOS, Android, and Windows that are common? Everything has, you know, Bluetooth or some have NFC or iBeacon support and settings and, you know, all this different stuff. Why don't we abstract that into a common API and enable developers to access those APIs from shared code, to have a simple API to say, speak this text, and it speaks it back, but calls the underlying native APIs. And that's what plugins for Xamarin are. Essentially, it's a set of plugins that are created by the community for the community. A lot by Xamarin's. I've created and worked on about 15 different plugins, but we have nearly, you know, I would say 50 to 100 different plugins that are out there in some form or another on NuGet. Essentially, work on these plugins. I have templates to get you off the ground running, and guidance to get you onto NuGet and creating these packages and ways of accessing the Android activity or getting down to different things. And then you create these. You are helping developers by creating a great, beautiful API for them to access these native APIs. And then you get an open source contributor license just for like doing things that you're already doing in your code, but sharing it with the world. So I just kind of launched personally. My personal objective was my plugins for Xamarin 2.0, which I just wrote about on my blog, Mots Codes, which I'm sure we'll put in the show notes. But essentially, I did a 2.0 release of all of my plugins, all 15 of them, and gave them a consistent namespace of plugin dot whatever it is. So plugin.context, plugin.media, plugin.text-to-speech, common DLL names across the board, and added UWP support. So all my plugins have support for iOS, Android, Windows Phone 8 Silverlight, Windows RT 8.1 phone in store, and Universal Windows Platform Windows 10 applications, and updated a bunch of other plugins to do that. So we essentially have a hand-curated list on a GitHub page, github.com/Xamarin/plugins.
Give me that one more time because you broke up a little bit.
Sure. It's github.com/Xamarin/plugins.
Great.
And you're going to find a hand-curated list where you can even submit your own. Say, hey, I made this. I would like it to be added to the list. You're going to find the NuGet package, links to documentation, and to the library creator of all of these different plugins that are out there, which are very amazing. I mean, the first thing I do when I create an application is, oh, I need to check connectivity. Let me get the connectivity plugin. I need to take a photo. Let me get the media one. Let me get the geolocation plugin. You know, what do I need to do in my applications? And if it doesn't exist, then I create a plugin for it. And the one that I'm really, really proud of, I would say I'm most proud of recently, is the permissions plugin, which I just created about a week and a half ago. And it's for runtime permissions, which have been around for a long time in iOS. They're like, oh, I need to get geolocation. That pop-up box comes up for you when you try to access the API that says, do you allow this application to get this thing? You know, and you allow okay or deny. Android, it's brand new too in Marshmallow, where you have runtime permissions too. So in Android, you actually have to now ask your users for permission to get geolocation or get access to different file stores or things like that. So I created a permissions plugin that works with an asynchronous API from shared code to check a permission and request permissions 100% from shared code. You never have to write a single line of iOS or Android specific code. I do it for you. And like, that's the power. That's the power of plugins. It's so cool. It's so cool, Jesse. I just love it.
And on top of this, you are still traveling 3 weeks out of four.
Yes. You know, we just had Thanksgiving, so I did take a little bit of time off, and the holidays are coming up quickly, so I'm very excited. But yeah, I'll be all over the place still. I got some conferences. I got CodeMash coming up in January. We're doing all these Xamarin 4 parties, talking about Xamarin 4 on our blog, on blog.xamarin.com. We can talk about, there's user groups all over the world throwing Xamarin 4 parties where you can see these in person, all the cool new features. Essentially, I'm doing one in Seattle and in Redmond. I might even be in New York. I'll be kind of all over the place. I'm talking about Xamarin 4, and I love it. So you'll see me somewhere. If not, I also do a live video YouTube stream called Motz Codes Live. Motz is my nickname. Motz Codes Live. Nearly every Friday, I hop on YouTube live for an hour and talk about something cool. This Friday, I'm talking about PCL versus shared projects. Which should you use? What are they? How do you use them? Type of things like that, which is very cool. So you'll find me all over the place. I love it. And then you'll find me at Evolve, obviously, in April.